This is side two of broadcast number 567, October the 18th, 1982, KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. Ronald Reagan is planning an attack on drugs. He wants a $200 million nationwide program. And another story in the Los Angeles Times, October 15th, 1982, he's going after more than organized crime. Now, this is the same honeybee, William French Smith, that let those 15 or more off. Okay, he's going after more than organized crime because organized crime is at his right hand with the people around him every single day. But this is what he pulls out from his old experiences, and he's going to use drug enforcement, acting drug enforcement administrator Chief Francis Mullen. He says that they're going after four principal motorcycle gangs, the Hells Angels, the Outlaws, the Pagans, and the Bandidos. And they're going after the prison gangs. William French Smith talked about La Nuestra Familia, the Mexican Mafia, the Aryan Brotherhood, and the Black Guerrilla Family. Now, it's awfully hard to deal drugs in prison unless the guards bring them in. And the guards do bring them in, and they release people on narcotics, doped up when they release them, so they'll continue it and continue the habit. And the prisons in the 8 years that Ronald Reagan was here in California, I studied extensively. I was in most of the prisons in Soledad, Folsom, Vacaville, knew many of the prisoners personally, knew their families, knew the situations that he created there, turning these groups against each other. I'm not saying that these eight groups, four in prison and four bicycle gangs, are saints, and I'm sure they deliver and distribute drugs. But when the Hell's Angels, they use that example, broke up the Altamont Festival when the Rolling Stones were playing, at the moment they were singing a song on John Kennedy, they stabbed and killed a man. They were provided with drugs by the CIA. It was filmed by the CIA. It was to follow the concert in New York at Woodstock to show the violent hippies, the anti-war people. They used the Hells Angels, the CIA, this is documented, used them on motorcycles to go into the peace people trying to stop ships and napalm from going to the bases over in Oakland and into to plow into them, to kill them, to drug them. They provided the acid to distribute. They had the acid for Timothy Leary and the CIA. He was from West Point. He distributed acid to people. The government has drugged the masses, just as the British drugged the Chinese. But if he wants to get his mafia friends and his appointments, his labor appointment and a secretary or other people off the hook, he won't go after the mafia. He's going after the lowest rungs of the social ladder that are used and are exploitable. This is an important story because it's so typically Ronald Reagan. Now, last Saturday, I was down at UCLA for the Students of Economic Democracy. There was a session they had, and we had two classes they were instruction classes and seminars, I guess that's what you would call them, on how the CIA was formed by Hitler's Gestapo. And many of you who are familiar with these broadcasts know what I've been saying for years, but these were new people that sat at tables, and I put on the blackboard names of important people they should know, like Herbert Hoover and J. Edgar Hoover and Reinhard Galen and Helene von Damm and a list of some Alan Dulles and J. Peter Grace and some of the most important people that have managed our lives in the past and are shaping our future. And I had the names on the blackboard and some important dates because I didn't want them to just have a blur when I left to remember these names and look them up because I'd hear them again and again and they should become familiar with them, Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and so forth. Then I left the session. There were two sessions and it was very good to meet with these young people and to see, you know, the gray matter going around, that wanting to learn, wanting to understand their society. And I felt very good. And then I left there and went a few blocks away from UCLA to the wedding of a very close friend of mine whose son got married. She asked me while I was in Los Angeles, would I come to the wedding? We've been friends since before we were born. Our parents were friends. That's how long we've known each other. And we were particularly close. So I went to this wedding and my father officiated and he had to leave right away. He's 92 and he doesn't stay for the dinner and the parties. And we had to get home, have dinner with my mother. So after the services and they took a few pictures, he left. And just going from one door to the car, it wasn't that far. A woman came up to my father, who he knows very well. Her husband was the former ambassador to Vienna, appointment of Ronald Reagan's, and her name is Mrs. Cummings, Mrs. Theodore Cummings. And she was very happy. She was at the wedding, and she said to my father, he just said, "How are you? What are you doing?" She mentioned, "Oh, I'm having some people from the State Department this week, and Helene Von Damme is coming to my home. She's coming out here." Well, that was Saturday night. She'll be here Monday and Tuesday at her home. And the contrast of going from UCLA, where I have Elaine's name over the blackboard explaining who she is, and then going to a wedding where this woman is excited to entertain Helene Von Damme and all these people, most of them are Jewish, and all I could do is just let out a gasp, and, you know, like this. And before I could say anything or before she asked me anything, she said to my father, "Now, don't tell anybody yet, but Helene may be appointed the future ambassador to Vienna, Ronald Reagan's appointment to Vienna." And then I really made a horrible sound, and she said, "Do you know who she is?" And I said, "Yes, she worked for Adolf Eichmann's superior. She was Reagan's secretary in California while she was at TCI. She worked for Mr. Otto von Bolschwing, a Nazi who controlled the Gestapo, the Odessa, and the World Nazi Organization, and she's in charge of the Jewish desk." And with that, Mrs. Cummings said, you know, just like, "Do you know that all Europe is going Nazi?" And I was very polite, and I said, "Yes, I do." I felt like saying, "Well, damn, and what do you think I have been trying to tell people? You don't know who I am, but I've been trying to tell this to people for 11 years on the air, and I've been researching it for 20 years. But anyway, I said, "I know." And so she says, "Tell me about Von Damme. Tell me." I said, "I can't tell you now. We're getting into the car." She was at the window of the car. I said, "If you want to talk to me, I'll be in Carmel tomorrow night. And otherwise, you know, you can phone me there. Dad doesn't like to hear this stuff. You can call me. You're entertaining Von Damme." Monday, she had a friend, an attorney, who has been her attorney at different times, or her husband's. And he called me and wanted to know, well, she was upset. "Who is Helene Von Damme?" "Well, how do you explain to people who don't know the vocabulary? Do you want me to teach you the Russian language or the Greek language when I don't even know the alphabet? How do you tell people who've blocked out 30 years of their life, who've lived in the belly of the beast, who haven't the faintest idea who they're eating with or entertaining and working with?" Now, I was suspicious when Ted Cummings died, Theodore Cummings. He was a very wealthy man who'd moved out from Austria, went to Los Angeles, according to the Washington Post. I have one story here. He had the food giant supermarket he formed in Long Beach in 1944. He sold it for $52 million in 1968. He gave $65 million to the Cedars-Sinai Hospital. That's the kind of money you're talking about, maybe $90-100 million. If you give $50 million away, you still have to have some left for the family, right? And he worked for Ronald Reagan when he was the governor. He helped him being initially when Ronald Reagan was the governor in this state. And he got this appointment. The only Jew in the administration of Ronald Reagan was Mr. Cummings. And he was sending him to the most anti-Semitic place in the world. And she's telling me the world's going Nazi. And I know what Vienna is and what Vienna was. And I was suspicious when Mr. Cummings was sick. He came home, I believe it was the first of the year last year, and just coincidentally, my father was in Cedars-Sinai having an operation, and Mr. Cummings was there. And first they said, "Oh, he don't tell anybody." The press didn't know he was there. And first story was he had a heart attack. Then they said he had cancer. Then he passed away. And there was very little in the media, a lot in Los Angeles, because he's from Los Angeles, and he was very generous in Los Angeles with his wealth, but nothing as an ambassador position. And as a matter of fact, I have an article from the San Francisco Examiner about a month ago on the California people around Ronald Reagan, and it has Mr. Cummings, the ambassador to Vienna. They don't even know he's dead. So that there was a lot of hush about his death. And now that he's dead, she's saying that Helene Von Damme may become the ambassador to Austria. Well, that's all I need to hear, and it really made my dander go up. There's another country that has not had an ambassador for a while. It was described in the Wall Street Journal October the 12th, 1982, if you want it. U.S. ambassadorship to Indonesia is post without a person. And this is about the Indonesian president, Suharto, coming to this country, and there's no ambassador, and it's a political backbiting. And they referred to it as the single most tortured ambassadorial saga of the administration. And it has to do with a particular gentleman who also sounds Jewish, Mr. Abramowitz, who Ronald Reagan was going to send to Indonesia, Morton Abramowitz, but the CIA wants their CIA agent, their counterintelligence agent in, and the Congress doesn't know if he would be approved because he has worked with the Central Intelligence Agency, and so they want to get Abramowitz a good appointment, but they can't appoint a Jew to anything high up in the Reagan administration because Helene Von Damme is in charge of the appointments. So they have to go what they call conservative enough, which translated means Nazi. So they're struggling with what to do with Mr. Abramowitz, and that's held up as the ambassador to Indonesia. Now, the importance of Helene Von Damme, many of you know week after week I talk about her and her role with the CIA, with Reinhard Gehlen's agency, with TCI, the corporation in Sacramento, with the World Network of the Odessa, of the dream of Hitler and Martin Bormann of the network. She's in contact with all the nerve centers of these people and makes appointments that, like J. Peter Grace, who are business partners of the Fricks and the Nazis, part of the extermination gang and the Deutsche Bank. And she has connecting links to the highest echelon of those that were and still are and will be tomorrow. Now, the importance of the Vienna desk, many of you don't know it, is that all the Jews who leave the Soviet Union leave there and go to Vienna. And the reason they've held up Soviet immigration from Russia is that they claim that instead of sending them to Israel, to their homelands, the embassy in Vienna siphons them to the United States or Great Britain or into other congregations around the world where they can begin America, anti-Russian propaganda, how good it is to be free. They all get books. They infiltrate synagogues. And it is very important to know that many people, the Gehlen operation was an agent of, he was Hitler's chief of intelligence, Eastern Division. And he has many spies inside the Soviet Union. And they can learn Hebrew just as Otto von Bolschring did and Adolf Eichmann. They can study Theodor Herzl. They can read and daven. And they can correspond and marry Jewish wives on the outside. Then they can come into the United States into many synagogues. And I can cite two that I know, Monterey Synagogue here on the peninsula and Wilshire Boulevard Temple, where people assume Jewish names or take on a Jewish identity who have links to the Gestapo. And I told this to my father 20 years ago or 15 years ago about a particular person. And he just this year discovered things that he didn't want to know for 20 years on this particular person. And 3 or 4 years ago, I came in with some pretty hard evidence, and he pushed it aside. It was too horrendous to know. But again, remember that Martin Bormann left with Eliezer Goldman. He left with the Haganah. He was a Jewish refugee. He was so well-trained, Martin Bormann, that the Jews on the boat thought of him as a Jewish refugee. And then when he gets to Palestine, it wasn't Israel yet, they go into camps, and he goes to the Grand Mufti, and then he's shipped to Argentina, where with Perón and Vito Perón and the whole gang, and Martin Bormann and Otto Skorzeny connect, and all the top Nazis of South America. He loses his Jewish name, and he's Martin Bormann. But many people have kept Jewish names, and if you infiltrate synagogues, if you come from the Soviet Union and you are getting your freedom, but you're oppressed because you are a Jew in Russia, you could be a Gentile with a Jewish name. They take over as secretary of the congregations. They take over the bookkeeping and the money. They know the names of the children who go to the Sunday school. They know who went there before. They keep lists. Hitler kept lists. They still have them on data banks in Salt Lake City. Interpol has them. The Mormon data banks have you going back to the year 600 and tracing families. So a woman with connections to the Gehlen agency or Otto von Bolschring, he was instrumental for the Deutsche Bank for taking the property and the jewelry and the belongings, the homes from Jews in Romania and in Holland, and putting in Swiss banks that went into the Bormann Brotherhood, went into the Odessa, and then he comes to the United States and goes out to Sacramento and is on a corporation where Von Dom does the translating and the work for them while she's the secretary of the governor. Then when he becomes the president, she goes to Washington and makes the appointments. So the infiltration of synagogues is a danger. There was an article May 13, 1981 in the LA Times, Helene Von Dom, Someone Special, and it refers to her second husband, Christian Von Dom, a German international banker. They were divorced in 1976. She was married from 1970 to 1976. Ronald Reagan was the governor here from 1968 to 1974. So in that time period, she was married to Christian Von Dom. And not only was he mentioned as an international banker, but when the question came up of the debt that Bolivia owes the United States, the international debt and the money that Bolivia owes, and Mr. Paul Erdman had it on KGO September the 11th, Bolivia owes $469 million to the United States, but they owe $10 million specifically to the Bank of America. And then, as I had on broadcast a little while ago, Christian Von Dom, I mentioned these on broadcast 564, if you want the tape, in La Paz, Bolivia, where they're working out the pledge and the foreign debt and the money for Bank of America, the representative of Bank of America in La Paz, Bolivia, is Christian Von Dom. It's reasonable that the international banker would be in California with the Bank of America because he was her husband when she worked for TCI and with the World Nazi Organizations. And down in Bolivia is a man, Mr. Claus Barbie, who was going to leave, I call him the Barbie doll, one of the top Nazis of France, of Lyon. He's called the Butcher of Lyon. He can stay down in Bolivia. He was going to leave there because the government changed hands and go to Brazil, but they don't want him anymore. The extradition date is over, and he works closely with the banks, with the cocaine king, and our government and the CIA and Ronald Reagan are trying to make deals with the cocaine king in Bolivia. There's a connection between Christian Von Dom, the debt of Bolivia, the Bank of America, cocaine, and Ronald Reagan. In the San Francisco Chronicle, a UPI story, September 3rd, cocaine king offers Reagan a deal. He'll turn himself in if the United States pays Bolivia's $4 billion foreign debt. Well, who in the heck wants him? He has a son who was arrested in Switzerland and put in Florida. And there was another story from the Houston Post. The cocaine king, the Bolivian millionaire, was going to kidnap the judge in Miami, Florida. There also was a plan to kidnap a judge several weeks ago in California on the same kind of hanky-panky, kidnap them and kill them. This man wants his son out, the cocaine king. So the intermingling of the narcotics, the banks, the deaths, and the Nazis go on. And Christian Von Dom, who was the husband while she was here, is still active in a good part that is related to the Reagan administration. She's making the appointments. I have a lot of good stories and articles about her, and many of you have heard them on the program, her close relationship to Roy Cohn. One story, big promotion for Reagan's secretary. This was August the 3rd. She got a higher promotion from being just certain appointments that she screened. She replaced E. Pendleton James, another water gator, in making the decision of who would get, like the U.S. Marshal. The appointments, I say, are not dentist appointments for the president, or I don't take them lightly. Who are you going to have lunch with? These are who will have cabinet positions, suggestions for judges, who will watch the cost overruns of labor in our country, like J. Peter Grace, with his links to the extermination in Germany, the slave labor piling bones on bones. She's the associate of the president. These 8 years he was the governor. She's in Washington now. She got promoted and had direct links to not only Otto von Bolschwing, Hitler's top Galen man to replace Galen when Reinhard Galen set up our CIA. He went back to Germany, and von Bolschwing was in charge of the United States agencies, and his closest contacts were with Warner Lambert, the drug firm, and that's Hoffman LaRoche, and Elmer Bops, the president of Warner Lambert. And Bops was the man, the godfather to Richard Nixon's career, the man who made Eisenhower the president, nominated Nixon as the vice president, and then Nixon brought in the Iron Guard, which was the entire von Bolschwing network. Some of this may be new to you, but it's important that you know it. If you don't know it already, you have to know it, and other people, it can bear repetition over and over, because as she moves up to get an appointment as the ambassador to Vienna, we could repeat this over and over. Now, Warner Lambert is a very political chemical firm connected with IG Farben and their international drugs and pharmacies, but it also is the political arm of the Cancer Society. If you want a good article on Elmer Bobbs and Warner Lambert, get Penthouse, May 1982. It's on the politicization of cancer research. Starting in 1913, the American Cancer Society. In 1944, when the war was just winding down, Elmer Bobbs from Hoffman LaRoche and Mary Lasker from the advertising company formed and became the head of the American Cancer Society. So in 1945 to 1981, they were in control of politicians and molding their minds while making the medications and the budgets and the allotments for the, quotes, the cure, but there's more causes than cures. And one of the first, for cancer, one of the first people that Elmer Bobbs put on the American Cancer Society, when they put it in the hands of the warrior spy politicians and took it away from the doctors, was William Donovan of the OSS. So he knew how to give poisons. He knew how to do people in. And they'd been doing it for a while, even before there was a CIA. But they politicized it and had a strong influence in the Sloan Kettering Institute in Yale, in Harvard Medical School, University of Wisconsin, Stanford, Rockefeller Center. The American Cancer Society has fingers in many, many places. Now, before there was a CIA, there was a Rockefeller Institute. And a World Watcher in New York sent me a clipping from June 20th, 1982. That's a few months ago. 51-year-old mystery. Did a doctor kill 8 people? A doctor down in San Juan, Puerto Rico, was working, his Dr. Rhodes, Cornelius Dusty Rhodes. He was a graduate of Harvard Medical School, and he boasted in letters of killing off Puerto Rican patients, transplanting cancer into others while he was allegedly doing a study on anemia. This study of anemia directly killed people, and he bragged about it in the letters that it's an ideal place to work on Puerto Ricans on the island, that you don't need health works. There's a tidal wave of people, and you have to do something. This is a quotation. What the island needs is not public health work, but a tidal wave of something to totally exterminate the population. This is a Harvard graduate writing a letter. I've done my best to further the process by killing off 8 and transplanting cancer into others. Okay. Now, he went on, the investigation disclosed as early as 1932 that he was doing this work and writing about it and bragging about it. Then he went on to a successful medical career. In 1945, he was appointed the head of the Sloan Kettering Institute for Cancer Research. That's where Martha Mitchell died of her cancer. And remember how fast 3-week cancer that Jack Ruby got? Well, when Elmer Bobbs in 1945 takes over the American Cancer Institute with his Hoffman LaRoche background and chemical background and the IG Farben, the gas that they made at Zyklon B that exterminated masses, and you combine the work in 1945, Rhodes' work at Sloan Kettering, where they're writing letters about total extermination of population. And then this article goes on to say, most of this information available on the case is in the Rockefeller Foundation Archives in New York, as well as the Puerto Rico General Archives in San Juan. So he was writing letters about total extermination, planting cancer. And so, you know, when a man comes home, his ambassador was it a short time, a year, 1 year, or 8 months, and then he comes home. He's the only Jewish appointment. He conveniently gets cancer. He's at the Vienna desk. And then the person who replaces him or who would replace him is a woman who's worked with on the same corporation, translating and working with people where Elmer Bobbs and Warner Lambert works with Otto von Bolschwing, with John Paul Getty, with Mr. Fenakis and nephew or relative of Aristotle Onassis, Fenakis, and another one, a vice president of ITT and the head of aerospace out here in the West. And the whole Odessa network is in the Otto von Bolschwing story and the TCI and California and what it splintered off into. And I'm not at liberty to do more now, but many of you have the broadcast that I did on. If you want the article, send a self-addressed self-addressed stamped envelope with two stamps, and I'll send you a copy of the article that Pete Carey did of Otto von Bolschwing that brought out Helene von Daim for the first time. Many of you remember that story, how I called Pete Carey at the San Jose Mercury because he did a story of Frank Turple being at Stanford Technology, and I said, go for this. This is the biggest story in the country. And within 2 days, he called me back to give me information about Turple working with Otto von Bolschwing and the organization that Helene von Daim worked with while she was working in the governor's office 8 years in California. And finally, there's just two things I want to mention briefly. Next week, I'm going to do in detail the story of the Nixon gang strikes back. There's one article from the Village Voice, August the 3rd, on a gentleman, Pete Wilson, who's running for the Senate against Jerry Brown. This goes into his he's a protege of a Marine, a fellow of the counterinsurgency down in Vietnam, of C. Arnold Smith, of the California Creeps, Ken Reitz, Mike Curb, the Robert Haldeman Dirty Tricks. You can expect Dirty Tricks the last week. I'm going into the California politics because if he becomes a senator, you get him too, as well as us, but it's up to us Californians to vote on the second and get Pete Wilson out of this election. That doesn't mean he'll die. These guys don't fade away. He'll just slime into another area, even if Jerry Brown were to win. But keep them moving. I think we should at least keep them moving. Finally, to conclude this broadcast, I got again from John Judge from the United States Army Times 2 weeks ago, September the 27th, 1982. An article that the Department of Defense did hide Nazis that came into this country. There were a lot of them. They were exposed on 60 Minutes as interrupting the investigation of Romanian Iron Guards. Those are the von Bolschwing gang and the Nixon gang that he brought through his offices. The Department of Defense criminal investigation is now looking into bringing Nazi war criminals into this country. Now, what they said in this article was in the Army newspaper that the Justice Department and the Defense Criminal Investigation Service have a large-scale investigation going, but it's not likely to lead to much action because the scope is too large for a thorough investigation. This is what I have tried to say for years. It is so big, and this is what I told the students at UCLA, Hitler's SS married the OSS in 1943, and Alan Dulles was the wife that merged the two. And there was this careful arrangement to use all the banks, the Schroeder Bank, the Reich Bank, the Hambros Bank, the Chase Manhattan Bank, the same banks that funded Hitler, and bring these people to the United States. That program on 60 Minutes just tapped one cover-up of criminals who came in illegally. And the Army paper said that to go into this now would be to review the policy for the entire Cold War period. The decision to bring them in the 50s with Eisenhower and Nixon was a contingency of their being president, and Elmer Bobst and Warner Lambert were behind getting the New Jersey Governor Driscoll to get them in. And this serious situation of bringing known criminals and lying about them being criminals and putting them as ministers into Justice Department jobs, into newspapers, into Radio Free Europe. We have never had a chance to have peace because they were brought here, given a lot of money, given books, given homes, given jobs, given synagogues. The ones that played Jewish probably got the best food and chicken soup and will live the longest because they took on the Jewish names. I'm sure that they got certain benefits that they didn't even expect. But the point is that these people are here, and now they've asked the General Accounting Office and Secretary of Defense Department, Caspar Weinberger, was there a cover-up? Yes, there was a cover-up, but if you turn open that rock, you go right back to who killed John Kennedy because they were involved in the murder of Kennedy. That's how I happened to study these people in the first place, studying who killed John Kennedy, came to all of these illegal Nazi war criminals who were used in the OSS, Office of Strategic Service, and then the and Hitler's SS simultaneously and merged to become the CIA. Well, Reagan used von Daim 8 years there. Is she going to be ambassador to Vienna? I hope not. I'll do everything I can before her name is mentioned to bring it up in any way I can. If Mrs. Cummings had said and knew me and knew I was on the radio or had called me personally and said, don't talk about it or wait, I might have had to be quiet if she had just personally called me and showed an interest in even wanting to know what I had done for 20 years. But she calls somebody, a mutual friend that I haven't seen in 20 years, and he calls me, so I don't really have any obligation except to truth. And you are the truth. You people who listen and take the tapes, you deserve the truth, and that's the way it is. So in the meantime, read your papers, read your books, study. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU-FM, and I'll be back with you on Monday night.